All right, so today we are going to dive deep into a pretty complex event, the partition of India in 1947.
Right.
We're not just going to talk about like what happened, you know, the timeline.
Right.
But we really want to like get into the why.
Yeah, the why.
The decisions, the culture, the ripple effects that we still see today.
Yeah.
And we have a ton of historical accounts focusing on the British in India. So this should get pretty interesting.
Yeah, and one thing that people kind of forget is just how far back this story really goes. We tend to kind of focus on 1947, but you have to go back centuries earlier when the British East India Company shows up.
It's kind of wild to think about, right? A trading company.
Yeah.
Like that ends up ruling a subcontinent.
Yeah.
I was reading about Warren Hastings. He was appointed like the first governor general in 1772.
Right.
And they were trying to, you know, bring some order to Bengal, which was like a lot of chaos at the time.
Yeah.
But that was really the moment where they went from like merchants to rulers.
It really is. It's like this big shift in power.
Totally.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like they just took over and everything went smoothly.
Of course not.
I mean, the British Parliament, they tried to keep the East India Company in check with things like, you know, the regulating acts, right?
Right.
And they had this whole idea that they were trustees for the people of India.
Right, this idea of trusteeship.
What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, it's really interesting, right? Because it's like, on the one hand, you have this idea of benevolent rule, like they're there to help.
Yeah.
But then when you look at what they actually did,
right,
it often doesn't match up. They did adopt some things from the Mughal system, like they used Persian as an official language, they acknowledged the Mughal emperor.
Okay.
But then at the same time, they, you know, maintained and in some cases even made worse these systems that were seen as oppressive. So you have this real disconnect between what they said they were doing and the reality.
Yeah, like this real tension between like trusteeship and like actual power. And that tension, I'm guessing, plays a huge role in everything that leads up to partition.
Oh, absolutely. This gap between their intentions and what Indians were experiencing.
Right.
I mean, that fueled resentment, that fueled nationalism.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so let's jump ahead a bit now. 1858, the East India Company is dissolved. British Crown takes over direct control of India. That seems like a huge turning point.
It really is. No more pretending it's just about trade.
Right.
Now it's the British government fully responsible for governing India. And at the same time, you start to see all these reforms. They're trying to modernize, centralize things.
Okay.
But of course, it's not peaceful.
No, not at all. And this is where like the Ilbert Bill controversy comes in, right?
Yeah.
In the 1880s. It feels like such a clear example of how these racial tensions were just under the surface.
Exactly. On the surface, it was just this bill about Indian judges trying European offenders.
Yeah.
In certain cases, but it caused this huge uproar among the British living in India. They were really anxious about racial hierarchy, about losing their power.
Yeah.
And the fact that this, you know, seemingly small thing caused such a big reaction, it really shows you how fragile things were.
Totally. So we've got British rule. We've got this like push and pull between reform and control.
Mm-hmm.
We've got these tensions.
Yeah.
And this is where we start to see Indian nationalism rising, right?
Yes. By the late 19th century, you have these organized movements demanding more autonomy, demanding independence.
Right.
Like the Indian National Congress. They were founded in 1885.
Right. The INC.
Yes.
And this is where it gets, you know, complicated.
Yeah.
Because it's not just one unified movement for independence, right?
Right.
You also have groups representing specific communities.
Right.
Like the All India Muslim League formed in 1906.
Yeah. The Muslim League.
Yeah.
And they're increasingly worried about being marginalized in an independent India that would likely have an Hindu majority.
So even as they're pushing for independence from the British, there's this division emerging within India itself, like this question of what a post-colonial India would even look like.
Exactly. And this is where the idea of a separate Muslim state, what would become Pakistan,
yeah,
really starts to take hold. And a key figure in this is Muhammad Ali Jinnah. In 1940, he declares that Muslims are a separate nation.
Wow.
And that changes everything. It adds this whole new layer of complexity to the situation.
Okay, so we're seeing like all these different forces at play now. British rule, Indian nationalism, and then this rise of communalism, this demand for a separate Muslim state. It's a lot.
It is a lot. And as we move into the 1940s, things get even more complicated. World War II just throws fuel on the fire.
Right.
And it makes this idea of a unified, independent India seem pretty much impossible.
Okay, so we're on the edge of our seats here. Where do we go from here?
Next time, we'll delve into the events leading up to partition. The failed attempts at compromise, the escalating violence, and the tragic division of the subcontinent. You were talking about World War II and how it affected things in India. It really did kind of highlight all the problems that were already there. Like, the war just drained all of Britain's resources.
Yeah.
And obviously their authority was weaker, and, you know, promises about independence, they just didn't sound that believable anymore.
Right. It's like the war exposed all these, like, cracks in the empire.
Exactly.
So, okay, what are the British doing at this point to, like, address all these demands for independence?
Well, in 1942, they sent this delegation led by Sir Stafford Cripps, which is where we get the name, the Cripps Mission.
Okay.
And they were trying to, you know, negotiate some kind of settlement. They offered India dominion status after the war. So basically, a certain level of self-governance, but not full independence.
Okay. And how did that go over?
Not well. For a lot of Indian leaders, especially in the Congress and the Muslim League, yeah, it just wasn't enough. You know, there was so much distrust because of the war, and it just felt like a, you know, weak attempt to kind of quiet things down.
Yeah, like too little, too late.
Yeah, exactly.
So how do we get from this failed negotiation to, like, the actual partition? What happens next?
Well, the years after the Cripps Mission were really, really rough. Tensions between Hindus and Muslims just kept escalating. And a lot of it was fueled by, like, political rhetoric and fear about the future.
Yeah.
Gandhi, who'd always been a huge advocate for a unified India,
right,
he was devastated by all of this, and he really tried to bring people together.
Yeah.
But, you know, the groups pushing for partition, they were gaining more and more power.
So it must have been heartbreaking for him, like, to see his vision of a unified India just falling apart.
Oh, absolutely. Gandhi really believed in unity and nonviolence. Yeah. He saw this potential for an India where Hindus and Muslims could live together peacefully.
Yeah.
But as things got worse, you know, violence started breaking out all over the country.
Right.
And it became clear that partition was becoming more and more likely.
So in 1947, the decision is made. India is going to be split into two independent states, India and Pakistan. Can you talk about what happened right after that?
I mean, the partition itself was just chaos. It wasn't just drawing lines on a map. You had millions of people suddenly on the move. Hindus and Sikhs in areas that became Pakistan, they fled to India. And Muslims in areas that stayed part of India, they fled to Pakistan. It's estimated like 10 to 14 million people were displaced.
Wow, that's an incredible number of people.
It's hard to even grasp the scale of the suffering and the chaos.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Families were separated, communities were uprooted, tons of people died in the violence. The stories from that time are just horrific. People making these desperate journeys, communities ripped apart, just this lasting trauma of displacement.
And as we've been talking about, the impact went way beyond that initial upheaval. Like, the effects of partition, politically, socially, culturally, they're still felt today.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the most obvious and long-lasting effects is the conflict over Kashmir. Both India and Pakistan claimed it, and it's led to multiple wars. It's still a huge source of tension.
Right. Like, Kashmir just shows how partition didn't solve anything. It just created a whole bunch of new problems.
Yeah, exactly.
What about the impact on culture? How did partition change the identities of India and Pakistan?
Well, in a way, partition, even with all the violence and trauma, it also kind of led to this creative outpouring.
Hmm.
Artists, writers, musicians on both sides of the border.
Interesting.
They started grappling with the experience of division, displacement, like trying to figure out who they were in this new fractured world.
So, like, even amidst the chaos, there was this art being created to, like, process all this emotional and social change.
Exactly. Literature, film, music. It all became a way to explore themes of loss, belonging, the human cost of what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if you look at writers like Sadat Hasan Manto or Khushwant Singh, their work really gives you a glimpse into the lives of people who went through partition. And they remind us that behind the politics, behind the big events,
yeah,
there were real people whose lives were completely changed.
It's a good reminder that understanding history isn't just about knowing facts and dates. It's about understanding the human stories, like the choices people made, the unintended consequences, the whole picture.
Absolutely. And those stories still matter today. Partition happened over 70 years ago.
Right.
But its legacy is everywhere in South Asia. You see it in the politics, the ongoing tensions, just the challenges of building a future for the region.
It makes you think about identity, belonging, the cost of division. Those are questions that go way beyond India and Pakistan.
Yeah, for sure. It's a reminder that even events that happened a long time ago, they can still shape our present and our future. Understanding partition with all its complexity and tragedy, it's crucial for understanding the world today.
So I'm curious, what do you think is the most significant consequence of partition? Like, what's its most lasting legacy?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, there are so many ways partition is still with us, like geopolitically, you know, with the Kashmir conflict, the rise of religious nationalism in both India and Pakistan. But honestly, I think the biggest impact is the one you can't really see, like the psychological, the emotional impact it had on generations of people.
Yeah, like the trauma that's been passed down, how it shaped people's identities, both individually and as groups.
Exactly. All that displacement, the violence, the way families and communities were just torn apart, it left these deep wounds. And those wounds don't just heal with time, you know?
Right.
They change how people see themselves, how they see their neighbors, how they see the world.
So partition isn't just this historical event. It's still a reality for so many people, even those born way after 1947.
Absolutely. It's part of their lives, their family stories. It's part of how they understand who they are and where they belong.
It's amazing how something that happened so long ago can still have such a powerful impact today. It really makes you realize that history isn't just something in a textbook. It's a force that shapes our world in so many ways.
That's why it's important to keep exploring these events, to look at the complexities, to listen to the people who lived through it.
And I think that's what's been so interesting about this deep dive. We haven't just been, you know, listing facts. We've been trying to understand the human side of partition, the motivations, the fears, the hopes, the dreams that were lost or changed forever.
And those stories, those individual experiences, they're so important if we really want to understand the impact of partition, because they remind us that history is made up of people's lives and the decisions made by those in power. They have consequences that go way beyond the moment.
Yeah. We started this deep dive talking about the British East India Company arriving in India. Looking back now, do you think partition was inevitable? Like, was it set in motion all those centuries ago?
You know, that's something historians still debate. It's impossible to say for sure if it could have been avoided. There were so many factors involved. British rule, the rise of nationalism, all the complexities of religious and cultural identities, and of course, the decisions made by key figures.
It's like this huge puzzle, right? With all these pieces connecting and influencing each other.
Exactly. But what we can do is look at those pieces, explore how they fit together, and try to understand what led to this event.
And by doing that, we learn more about the challenges of building nations, the complexities of identity, and what happens when people are divided.
The partition of India is a reminder that the past is never really over. It's still shaping our world in really profound ways.
And it's a story that should make us keep asking questions, keep challenging what we think we know, and keep trying to understand even the most difficult things.
Because ultimately, if we want to build a better future, we have to learn from the past.
I think that's a great place to wrap things up. This has been a fascinating deep dive, and I have a feeling we'll be thinking about this topic for a long time.
I agree. And I hope our listeners will continue to explore this history, to learn about the people who lived through it, and to think about what we can all learn from this event.
Keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep learning.
Yeah.
This has been The Deep Dive.